Johnson.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm
Eric Marino.
Eric.
Who plays me from the crabs?
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta
let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay. It don't really matter, life is sweet, cause I got honeys. Got honeys in my bedroom, I got honeys in my car. Don't pick up girls in clubs, leave those bitches at the bar. I need a honey with the motto, she can tell me what she wants to. Can tell me like it is, that's what I need. I hope she got it. Good it, I can pick on it, she falls and I'll make fun of it. If she laughs, I love her, if she don't, then I want none of it. See the girls who get the deals about them, everything they want. Don't call those girly sunnies.
All right, we are back. This is Sportsaholics episode number 160. That's right, that's a train whistle, so that means the one and only Eric Marino. In the house, not in the studio, but in the house, meaning episode.
I'm in the telephonic range. I'm via satellite, via phone, wherever. I'm calling you live from Sunset.
Well, happy to have you back, and for your listeners at home, this is episode number 60, the Otto Graham episode, Hall of Fame quarterback, number 4 overall pick by the Browns in 1944. I didn't even know they had a draft back then, other than military. Played 10 years, 5-time Pro
the last
Bowler.
Time the Browns were good.
Yeah, 3 NFL championships and 4 AAFC championships there.
All right, because they were the All-American Football Conference. Those guys, a couple teams came over from the old
played under
All-American
legendary coach Paul Brown, which I, up until last year, had no idea was why the Browns were called the Browns. But Otto Graham was.
By the way, glad that was happening in Cleveland. Because it was the Boston Arrowbacks. I don't know if I could root for them. The Boston Arrowbacks. That'd be a little tough.
I thought you were saying Arrowbacks, and I was like,
I mispronounced Arrowback. Whatever.
Yeah, that's the mass hole coming through. But Graham was on the 75th anniversary team, and his number is also retired, which in Cleveland is number 14. But he wore two numbers, so 14 and 60.
So he is like the Kobe of Cleveland. He has two numbers retired.
Yeah, with probably a lot less time spent in court under sodomy charges, I'm guessing.
You never know.
I don't know if Otto Graham ever played in Denver, but we'll have to check the stats. But well, a lot, Eric, has happened since two episodes ago, the last time you were on. In sports, I mean, for me, right off the top, I'm just going to dive right into baseball.
Good.
Because every day for the past 3 months, I've woken up, stared at my phone to check and see if Hosmer had re-signed with the Royals. And I had a pipe dream that somehow that the GM Dayton Moore was going to somehow get this hometown discount and get Hosmer and then Moose to take a friendly deal. And then,
right.
And, you know, Hosmer's now in San Diego. Moose still hasn't signed as we're recording here late on the 21st of February. So who knows what happens. There's not really a market for him now, from what I understand. But, you know, good for you, Hosmer. Thank you for the World Series. Thank you for the parade, all the memories. You're amazing, amazing first baseman. And don't blame me for going to San Diego. It's beautiful down there. You're going to be the face of the franchise. One of the owners of the Padres today came out and stated publicly that Will Myers isn't the face of the franchise and doesn't want to be. So they're automatically putting all that on Hosmer, which he's more than capable of handling. But love the fact that he took Ventura's number 30. I love that tribute. And it kind of reminded me, very similar to what Christian Yelich said a few days ago about the Marlins, that when Jose Fernandez died in that boat crash, the Marlins, that run or that team that was put together was done. And
right.
Very similar with Kansas City. Once you lose Ace Yordano Ventura, I mean, obviously the 16 season was kind of weird. There was a lot of injuries there, but coming off a World Series, they were competitive. They had a chance had there not been big injuries to Moustakas the whole season. But then the last run was going to be last year. And so when Ventura dies in January, or was it January 21st, right before spring training,
right.
you know, that's a mate. That's a number one starter you're losing, or number two. You know, they missed the wild card game, I think, by 5-6 games. So, I mean, you insert 10 wins into the, you know, now all of a sudden you're in playoff contention. Now all of a sudden maybe there's another run to the World Series, and who knows? Maybe Hosmer and Moustakas are already re-signed with the Royals. Obviously, none of that happened, and tragically, Yordano did pass away, but that was the end. It wasn't Hosmer leaving to San Diego this week. It was Yordano Ventura dying 13 months ago. That was...
You know what, John? I'm just going to say this one thing about to all you Royal fans out there to listen. Thank you guys for listening. Just if there's any consolation, it's not that you just won a World Series in your own lifetimes and in this decade. It's really that, just remember, the best stadium food that can ever be had is at Kauffman Stadium. It's the pulled pork on the French fries served in a batting helmet with pickles. I'm just telling you, it's still the greatest thing I've ever eaten at any stadium. So a tip of my batting cap full of barbecue and fries to the greatest thing I've ever eaten.
And if you go to the right cashier in the right field pavilion, you might not get charged for sodas either. Or
I didn't get charged properly for the meal. I somehow came out, I think I paid like $7 for like a $23 thing.
Oh yeah, you skated out of there like a champion. Like at some point while we're eating, I expected like security to tap us on our shoulder or something.
yeah, it was really.
Oh, you still owe us $14. The lady was on crack that was working the register. That was your
It was a great time.
You hired
followed
her.
Followed by some indoor arena football, which was that was a good sports day. That was one of the highlights.
I was happy because that was just for me. To introduce you to Kansas City sports. I mean, that was a great, we showed up to Kauffman listeners and it was a rain delay. So we sit there, we pace the stadium, we get comfortable. We had some great seats. Randy Bogard, comedian in Kansas City, took care of us right on the right field foul pole, outfield front row seats, got to taunt Kepler. That's right. Kepler. We found out his,
The guy was born in Germany, right?
Yeah. Born in Germany and parents were ballet dancers. Was that right?
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I remember that. But then we.
And I gotta tell you, when you're taunting somebody about their ballet dancer parents, you know, you definitely feel like a Bart Simpson bully. You know what I mean? Like you definitely feel like a like you definitely feel a little bit. You feel a little bit like a seventh grade bully. And so you know.
There was
so
one.
I'm sorry.
I remember. There was one year the Rockies were playing the Dodgers and I was out in left field and it was like Todd Helton was in left field. And then they had and Todd Helton was a quarterback at Tennessee. And then they had another quarterback, college quarterback on their roster. The Rockies did. I forget who it was, but the entire game, I was just heckling Todd Helton about how he was a far inferior quarterback and like he was nowhere near as good as his teammate. And, God, heckling really opened up as soon as we got mobile phones. Otherwise, you just were kind of, you had to just go with baseball card facts and just random, you know, scandals.
I know, but you know, I don't know if you heard, there was a bad moment this year, this past week in hockey in Chicago. Four Chicago Blackhawk fans had to be removed. They were heckling a black member of the Washington Capitals in the penalty box, chanting basketball.
I saw that.
Yeah, not cool, guys.
It's not cool. But part of me was just kind of shocked. I was like, really? You got kicked out for chanting basketball? And that's just because I've been the white guy on the courts that, you know, every time I touch the ball, it's like, look, Larry Bird in the corner, you know, it's
just... Is it really an insult to be called Larry Bird in the corner?
Right, I mean, and that's why I was kind of like, you know, it's insulting to the in the sense that, like, yeah, there's only but three. Like Subban's the only one I know, and then this guy and maybe a couple others. Traditionally Canadian born.
He was a Canadian. He is a Canadian.
African Canadian parents from immigrants from West Indies, like Jamaica and, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, getting basketball, I guess. Yeah, it's I just can't believe they got kicked out. And they were shocked. The look on their faces, they were like, what? The guy's wife stood up and was like, what are you talking about? But
actually, if you guys look, one of the greatest things is the guy. So the heckled player comes over with his stick, which I love that he's holding his stick. Yeah. Like, he's coming over. And now what I love about, like, the guy, there's a guy right by the glass who not only, like, stands up and he's like, are you talking to me? Like, what? Was it me saying it? But for some reason, the guy, like, takes it. He as he stands up, he decides to, like, stand up and grab his cup out of the cup holder.
He's like, I'm taking the beer with me just in case I got to pour this over the glass.
No, he's not being ejected yet. It's like he's just talking to the player back and forth. And it's like, what are you talking? Is it me? I didn't say whatever back and forth is going on, whatever banter is going on back and forth. This guy's like, well, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to hold my drink. It's such a weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird, stupid
move. It's a good approach because the presentation is like, look, I'm still so casual. I've done nothing wrong. I mean, I'm ready to.
Yeah, I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. I'm still just having my beverage.
Yeah, that. It actually reminded me, I mean, of this was. So one of my good friends growing up in Kansas City played on the best hockey team in Kansas City, whatever that means. But they played in a Minnesota league. So they would drive up to Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin all the time to play. Sure. So they had a black kid on their team that they played with. Like, they grew up, you know, he was on there. They were like, they played together, this team did, for 10 years from when they were kids growing up. And so sure enough, he said that this particular player would deal with that shit all the time. And there was one game, he said, in Iowa, which I don't know what city, we'll just say Grant Cedar Rapids just for fun, just to make the people of Cedar Rapids sound horrible here in about 30 seconds.
Somewhere in the Quad City. Yeah.
So the guy, for some reason, apparently the bleachers were elevated. So when you're sitting down, your knees are already at the glass. There's not that little 2-foot buffer, and then the glass starts like at about your chest, you know, like typically if you're sitting. So anyway, this kid gets up in the corner and the fans start reaching over and like grabbing this black kid's face mask and start pulling on it because you can reach over the glass, and they were tied up in the corner. And my buddy went and took the butt end of his stick and jabbed the kid right under his mouth and busted out a bunch of his teeth. And he said, he's like, dude, nobody fucked with that kid again the rest of the season. I was like, yeah, I'm like, you just sent a kid to the dentist with like $3,800 worth of repairs. It's so whenever I see like they're chanting basketball, basketball, I'm like, I thought this was hockey. I thought there was like street justice, you know, like you go back to the bench and you make up a story about how they were calling you dropping in bombs and this and that, and you get Ovechkin all worked up and you kick somebody's ass out on, you start fighting.
I don't know which part I think is the weird estimated thing. I can't figure out what the funnier estimate that you did is, like, that you just randomly wanted to, like, let me just say that it's Cedar Rapids, or that you just were like, yeah, it was $3,800 worth of dental. It was like $3,800 is a weirdly random but specific number of, like, and I get it. Like, you know, it's a couple teeth, it's a bridge.
Yep, and I just went right to my head. I'm like, what would it cost to replace
$3,800,
four? A good like 2 months worth of pay for someone in Cedar Rapids or Sioux City or wherever that took place in 1998, 20 years ago.
All right, geez, what else we get on? What's on the scoreboard for today?
Well, I don't know. You had mentioned the Louisville thing. I mean,
No, I could not. I couldn't have possibly met. That didn't happen, Sheez. Yeah. What happened in Louisville doesn't happen anymore. 2013, what happened? In fact, the worst part is my Syracuse Orange were in that Final Four, and now they were in a Final Three? You know, we still lost to Michigan, and Michigan apparently didn't lose.
Yeah,
but they didn't win the title. So, I don't understand how that works.
And so now, does Patino coach again? That's what I wanted to ask you. Is he on the sidelines, whether in college or maybe even in the NBA? You think that's a possibility?
No, I don't think. I got to be honest with you. I think this sex. I think this sex party scandal was so bad that I think he's tainted for good. I do. I think it's a bad taint, and it's also one of those things, like, we couldn't really get him, but they got enough, like, there's enough on him that you know there's – it's almost like we all know that – to me, it's a lot of smoke. There's fire. There's also, I guess – I don't know if you know this, Sheezer. Evidently, Patino actually got a tattoo. Like, I saw the tattoo, and at first I just thought it was some fan who got a Louisville 2013 national champion tattoo. And you're like, oh, well, you know, at least the guy got a tattoo to remember it since the banners get taken away. But I actually, and then for a second, I thought it was Patino, and I thought, oh, that's photoshopped. But no, I guess Patino has a tattoo on his left shoulder blade with the big Louisville L, and the 2013 World Championship, and that's got to be. I mean, that's that's embarrassing.
You know what? And a little shout out to whoever designed that Louisville logo, because it wasn't until 3 days ago that I realized that the L. The back of the L is also the border of the state of Kentucky, or which also makes – or no, the L is the border of the bird head where the feathers are. So good design.
Oh,
they integrated the
that
feathers.
That is a good design.
That's why the L looks
– I'm going to have to go back and check my back issues. I'm going to go back as soon as we're done and check that out.
Because I've always looked at the L, and I'm like, it's clearly an L, but it looks different. And now I put it together. It's because there's feathers on the back of it. I just – Patino's a legend. I mean, he's been in and around the game. When did he start at Providence in 88?
Well, to be honest with you, there's a whole thing where, you know, actually he traces, he's like one of his first jobs is an assistant coach at Syracuse with Jim Boeheim. Like Jim Boeheim calls Patino up during his wedding, or, you know, I mean, it's like he's on his honeymoon, and basically like Patino like cuts his honeymoon short and has to drive up to Syracuse with his newly married wife. And there's a weird thing that I have to say. It's like, you know, Syracuse was in the Final Four. We lost to the Patino's Wildcats of Kentucky in 96. And we were in the Final Fours with the Louisville Four.
That was the John Wallace Syracuse team, right?
That is the John Wallace Syracuse team, right.
Nick, famous New York Nick, number 8 guy on the bench.
He was so good. He was so good. That's one of those disappointments. Like how Charlie Ward, who was a football playing Florida State Seminole, could be a better Nick, a longer Nick than John Wallace.
It was like wrong place. Like John Wallace could have easily been Antoine Walker. Easily. Like,
sure.
You know, it's like I never understood Antoine Walker. For you youngsters out there, Antoine Walker was back. Okay, in the NBA 10, 15 years ago, there was this massive – it was the opposite of Steph Curry back then. No one could hit a jump shot to save their life. And people were talking about it in the press and how no one had jump shots anymore. And it was right after the high school, everyone jumping right in. So they were blaming it on the youth and everything else. And then out of nowhere, Boston shows up. Antoine Walker, they get Tony Delk, and they get that little Kentucky thing going there for a little while. But
they had Ron Mercer, too.
Walker would get freaking 30 shots a game, and I never understood it. Like, lazy defense, always looked like he was 20 pounds overweight, like a miniature.
Yeah, he was one of those, not quite a wide body. Like, he wasn't that Barkley, but he was definitely that out of shape, had a great nickname, the Wiggle.
Exactly. And so I'm just like, and I never understood why that guy got that type of opportunity in his career, and maybe he was sneaky great, and I just didn't see it because I'm not a basketball scout.
They had one of those like him and Paul Pierce in 2002 combined for one of the best comebacks in playoff history, but end up losing the series to the Jason Kidd Nets at the time.
Yeah,
but it's all going back. Just go back to Patino and Louisville. And now the fact that the thing never happened, you know, we have a vacated championship. But as a Syracuse alum, there's still a point where, you know, I live in a glass carrier dome that I don't want to throw too many stones because, therefore the grace of God, we could have had our, you know, when Boeheim, we had to vacate a whole bunch of Boeheim wins. And some of that tracks back to our 2003, our national championship year. And I think, to me, I'm going to tell you, the times that they are always changing, change is the only constant. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to see a lot more sort of litigation in your sports. I believe we're in the next 50 years, you're going to see a lot more vacated championships or wins on every level, on high school, in the pros. I mean, it's
going to get ugly. I mean, this FBI investigation that's coming on right now, it's like – it's tying former agents and shoe people and college scouts, and this community is so small. You make you're 2 degrees removed from everybody that's in the pros in college, and so it's so tight knit. That's why when Patino's like, "Oh, I didn't know," it's like you knew, but you're smart enough to just say you didn't know. And what I was saying earlier, what I meant to just point out, and hopefully I did, is that John Wallace should have had a much better NBA career. That's what
and that's why we're friends. And yes, deep down, yes, that's why we're friends. John Wallace, who like went a coast to coast, won against Georgia during that. Oh, it was a great man.
No, God. I'll never forget sophomore year, our biology class, my buddy Samir coming in and being all excited because Syracuse got hot and he had Syracuse winning it all that year. So he thought his bracket was going to be big shit. He had a good bracket that year, but for some.
Yeah, I didn't want to know. I think I won my bracket that year. Syracuse is, I have that theory. One of my theories is that Syracuse, Arizona, and UCLA are basically, for all intents and purposes, the same tournament team.
Yeah.
They're going to be upset in the first two games, or they're going to go on some deep run.
Now, 96, was that UCLA or was that the Miles Simon Arizona year?
Well, 96 is the Wildcats, and
right.
That's Syracuse.
Oh, that's
and Syracuse.
Right. Okay. That's
and
right.
I want to
yeah,
say
yeah.
We had to play Mississippi State Bulldogs, who had Eric Dampier.
That guy
and
was
that
a
was and
dump
that
truck.
Also was Marcus Camby and UMass, who I believe had to vacate all their wins.
It's gonna get ugly, folks. If parents, if you got
was,
kids,
and that was Calipari. At UMass, and I believe they had some difficulties at UMass and Camby, and who also later became a Nick, and a lot of those wins. We get a lot of vacated wins in college basketball, but I think there's a lot more to come.
See, I mean, just that Marcus Camby, and what I think college basketball has been lacking. You've seen it a little bit this year with Trae Young. You saw it a couple years ago with Ben Simmons. But that superstar, if you go back to 96, that superstar battle, when you had Tim Duncan versus Marcus Camby, I mean, that was
sure.
They built that thing like a heavyweight fight. You had, I mean, after that game, I can't even remember who won. I just remember this one play where Camby goes behind his back, dribbles all the way down, and at 6'11", dunks. I mean,
right.
Right around the same time as Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett obviously was still in high school. I think it maybe was a rookie in the NBA at that season. But you hadn't really seen that style. And so I'm thinking like, oh, man, Camby, this is going to be the best player in NBA history.
It was right around the time that, remember, Olajuwon had just won two titles. And you were seeing that, like, you know, and Olajuwon was in his absolute height of his powers. And he was a very athletic, lean, flexible, made crazy, you know, bending shots from crazy angles kind of big man. This wasn't just a big, you know, Robert Parrish or Shaquille O'Neal.
Like you could take that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar footage versus Bruce Lee and just edit in Olajuwon up and under fakes, and it's the same thing. I mean, the guy. If you're a teenager right now, you play basketball, say you're undersized, you don't go down low, you're worried about getting your shot blocked. Go watch some Olajuwon up and unders. You'll never have a shot blocked again the rest of your high school career.
Oh, and you know, like, and that, it was Kevin McHale with those crazy arms, also weird. You know, there used to be some very weird shots.
Dude,
or as you know, Tim Hardaway would say, ugly knuckleball action.
And look, there's another, like, Tim Hardaway Jr., good for you. And he survived the Knicks plague and somehow had a really good NBA career. I mean, not all-star. Not...
Are we on Tim Hardaway the third yet? I don't know.
I can't wait. He's going to be very dynamic player. Since we're on basketball, NBA All-Star Weekend. What the hoop? It was just like nobody. They try to make it a big deal, and it's fun and all that kind of stuff. But the way that they phrased that last 2 minutes, like, it was just awesome. Everyone was playing defense and the game mattered. I'm like, it was 90 seconds of basketball. It wasn't that great. You know, obviously the highlight is Fergie. She stole the show. I mean, by reinventing the national anthem. But did you watch the game at all? Any of it?
I did not, but I enjoy this pick their own teams thing. I think that it did make them play a little bit better. I mean, it made them matter. I mean, the year before was something like 198. I mean, it was almost 200 points. It was almost 400 points scored the previous
year. It was like a score from the NBA back in 83 when everyone was on coke and no one played defense, and they introduced the three-point line. They're like, this is awesome.
You know, I think they're doing a better job. I think, and I'll be honest with you, here's the comparison I'll make. I think the pick 'em, the pick your own games, pick your own team, and that it led to a better fourth quarter, and even if it's the last 2 minutes, I think that is more successful than the stupid Major League Baseball, we're going to make it count.
Yeah, that was, I love that. I mean, we got home field advantage 2 years in a row as a Royals fan because of that.
I think I got it twice. I may have gotten it every single time because of that.
So, Bud, C-League, God, I loved you. I mean, Manfred, you're doing a great job too, buddy.
See, I got the advantage, and it was still wrong. It was still wrong. And I will never like Bud C-League.
Really? You just, what, from 94? Was it the strike? Or
not
just...
a fan. I'm not a fan. It's like, there's even a point where, like, this is old man Marino, and I'm going to say, like, to me, the Milwaukee Brewers will always be an American League team. Like, I grew up seeing them play and Robin Yount and stuff like that. And the Houston, like, the Houston Astros, not, it doesn't bother me the Houston Astros are the world champions. It bothers me that every time that I see when they play, I go, oh, they're the interleague game. And I'm like, no, they're in the American League. And I'm like, they're not in the American League, but they are.
You're like, I miss the NL Central with 17 teams in it.
I do miss that. I miss the stupid AL West that only had four teams, and somehow the Oakland A's could come back from anything in August. And I miss the six-team Central that, you know. And then the weird thing is, like, I mean, I get it. See, Bud Selig, he was the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers. He goes back historically to the Milwaukee Braves and Hank Aaron, and they were a National League team. So in some ways, Bud Selig's dream was to watch his Brewers be a National League team, and they were. But then it's one of those things like, okay, so a moment comes when they go, okay, well, one of the NL teams is going to have to go back, is going to have to go to the AL, and we're going to balance it out. We're going to go 15-15. But they don't send the Brewers back. Like, this should be like, last hired, first fired. Like, Brewers, hey, that's nice that you came over and are National League team, but, you have this whole history. You should just go back. Instead, it's like, oh, we should. I mean, and why not? Because you could have the Milwaukee, Minnesota. Like, there are. You know, they would have
it does make more sense. Like, if they are an American, because you could say, oh, that Cubs rivalry. Yeah, you know, you got the White Sox are only 10 miles further south. You got Minnesota
You have the Twins. You have the Tigers. Yeah, have the White Sox. Yeah. Like, you know, you have that whole Big Ten kind of thing.
Yeah, you're not looking at Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, which is kind of close. Right. But, you know, I mean, when they look.
But then again, hey, I'm so old. I remember when Atlanta was in the NL West as the Braves and the NFC West as the Atlanta Falcons.
Unbelievable. Just
some weird, weird things.
They just didn't care. Look, for me, the Brewers are always AL because of George Brett's 3,000 hit season, I think 92, because he and Yount were neck to neck that whole year for that 3,000 hit. And then, of course, the strike hits. And then did they have – it was just East and West before the strike, or did they actually have a Central?
It was they were just East. The Central gets created in 1995. It's like 95 is when they go to three divisions and they add the wild card.
96,
which is also one of those crazy things where then they unbalance the schedule because it's like the wild card. You know, it's even like, and we can tie this back into basketball because the commissioner is talking about doing weird reseeding. In other words, we'll do eight teams from the East and eight teams from the West. We'll still make the playoffs, but then we're going to reseed them, and they won't. Somehow basically like Houston and the Warriors could actually meet.
Yeah,
possibly.
I was hearing grumblings of that. I didn't like it.
But that's also weird because we're not all playing the same team. So you're going to reseed me by record, when you're saying if I'm playing in a tougher conference, that's going to bring down, you know, there's a certain yep. time where, you know, there's a certain year, like you can also say there are certain football divisions that they beat each other up a little bit more. Whereas like, you know, the New England Patriots right now are very dominant with the AFC East. They lose like one or two games to their rivals a season. And so they're in great shape. Whereas sometimes, you know, there's like an NFC South that's just like somehow they all go 1-1 against each other. You know, somehow the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints, no matter how good either team is, it always ends up in a field goal kicked by Morton Anderson.
Right. Yeah. Well, I like that you managed to bring a full circle to the Patriots. We'll go into halftime real quick, guys. You know the drill. If you're in Southern California, in La Jolla, I don't give a shit, Solana Beach, Encinitas, wherever, on your way to Tijuana, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop, Caddy Corner from the world famous Comedy Store on Pearl Street, right in the heart of downtown La Jolla, California. Follow the man on Instagram, Twitter, all that good social media stuff at Eat a Burrito. And guess what? It's getting kind of cold. You probably need some shirts printed up, some custom stuff, maybe basketball team, softball coming up in the spring. Go to unionpresskc.com. Unionpresskc.com. They'll take care of you. Good, fast service, good competitive prices. They do all my shirts when I'm on the road. I love the guys down there, unionpresskc.com. And listeners, tonight, February 22nd, I'm saying this because we're releasing this at midnight, but if you're in Northern California, I'll be at the District Theater in Gilroy with the very funny DJ Sandahu, Matt Devlin, and Glenn Bolton. That's at the District Theater. That's February 22nd. And then Midwest folks, May 10th, I'll be in Kansas City at the Mod Gallery. May 10th, it's right in the heart of the Crossroads in that Midtown section. Mod Gallery, May 10th. And then May 11th and 12th, you know it, the Blue Room, Springfield, Missouri. It's been 9 months, so you know.
It's time to play the jazz club
again. I'm coming back. Yeah, no, I'm leaving out. There's no Liquid Lounge. I think the Topeka gig is done. There's grumblings that the...
That's always, if it's the Blue Room, it's always your jazz tour, you know?
Yeah, I always, some of those clubs, I just like to get up there just to burn time. But then sometimes you get burned with that strategy because, you know, the shows are so bad, you just want to kill yourself in the parking lot afterwards. So
it is always
every once in a while. All right, guys, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back here right after this. We are here at halftime. It has been
the halftime report.
It has been fantastic. It's been a very efficient, effective, I think on point first half of the show. Eric, your thoughts?
Well, I think, I don't know. I feel like we might have been just getting by like that Olympic skier who's American but skiing for Hungary. We might have been gaming the system a little bit. I kind of hope we do something a little bit more spectacular and end up on the medal podium by the end of the show.
Amen to that. And with that being said, surely we will discuss the Olympics when we
get
back.
Let's go for the bronze.
Sportsaholics episode 160, the Graham Otto edition, which we all learned earlier, played in Cleveland under legendary
coach Paul Brown,
14 and 60. Otto Graham, NFL Hall of Famer. Okay, I'm just going to throw this out there because I love the amount of sports documentaries that are out nowadays. I saw Hoop Dreams in the theater, Eric. Can you believe that? I saw that shit
theater.
I came out of that thing in my backyard. I was William Gates, Arthur A.G. for the next 14 months of my life.
I almost watched it. It was on last night, and I said, let me take a look at this. And again, I'm like, it'll depress me because I know that the kids, their Hoop Dreams ended up to be nothing.
Well, not as...
And by the way, since then, the school that they went, one of the kids who's in Hoop Dreams, got shot.
Yeah. William Gates.
And he's in a wheelchair because they went, it's like Brian Gumbel's Real Sports went back and they visited. And it was all about, violence in schools and basketball.
That movie had such an effect because I love, I was the kid, skateboarding and all that stuff. And then. I grew 7 inches. I had size 14 shoes that just skate, and I got hurt a couple times. I was like, screw skateboarding, started playing basketball, and I could jump. But in that movie, William Gates, the kid that goes to Marquette, he's dunking when he's 14. So in my head, I had this thing like, I need to be able to dunk when I'm 14. And I shit you not, my freshman year, right at the end of basketball season, I had my first dunk. It was like about 2 months before my 15th birthday. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm right on course for Marquette. Obviously, took a couple different paths. Didn't end up at Marquette playing basketball and scholarship, but I got no complaints. All I'm saying is Hoop Dreams is an amazing movie, award-winning, and there really had been nothing like it when it came out. I think it was 93, I think, is when it came out.
Sure, right around there.
But yeah, if you haven't seen it, invest some time. But because of that movie and the popularity of that, people just, and there's so many great stories in sports. And, but like you mentioned, the real sports with Brian Gumbel and the 30 for 30s. And I caught the Big East 30 for 30 again. I rewatched that, which pretty much documents the rise of college basketball and how the Big East, for the first time ever, brought a national championship to the Northeast and brought such big ratings with, Patrick Ewing's and was it Pearl Washington over there in Syracuse?
Sure. I mean, it's one of those interesting things that in a way it's like the Big East gets started as a basketball conference and actually it's when I go to college there, it's trying to stitch together a football conference.
Yeah.
And we have, and it was one of those things like it was made like you're at the time it was like, Syracuse, BC, Boston College, Miami, Notre Dame, Penn State, West Virginia. They're all independents. Like there's still a lot of just independent, unaffiliated, not in conference schools. And it's one of those things where Penn State becoming the 11th team in the Big Ten was a devastating move. And they tried to get, they're trying to get them getting Miami was sort of that. It's like, well, Miami's huge in football with the multiple championships, Jimmy Johnson, Michael Irvin, all that.
Yeah.
And they were almost, it was almost like Miami was trying to get more legitimate with basketball. And it was sort of like this, it was supposed to be a this should work for both of us. You'll get better at basketball. We'll all get better at football or get more notoriety. And it never really worked out that way.
No, and in fact,
and it all fall apart. And now it's at that point, as we were talking tournament in the first half, and we're right around, we're almost out of February, so we're almost going to be in the conference championships and then March Madness and the Final Four. And this is right around the time of year that I get mad that Syracuse is not in the Big East and we're in the ACC, and I hate that.
It was a blessing. I mean, I think it was the last. I think it was your last Big East tournament at Madison Square Garden. That was it. 4 overtime game, or 6 overtime, or something against. I think it was Notre Dame. It was a good way to go out.
The worst part is we can't go to another Big East conference. Like, I don't want to go to the
NBA. I grew up in Kansas City.
I'm from Syracuse. And we have to go down to we have to go to North Carolina and Greensboro or someplace.
Dude,
to play.
I haven't seen KU play MU in basketball in they had a great exhibition game. Good job, guys. I mean, and they did that right at the beginning of this year, which that was the first time in a long time. But this is it's the border war, one of the biggest rivalries in college sports, basketball or football. And they that's been completely abandoned. And I mean, the Big East tournament is a legendary tournament, but you're kind of preaching to the choir here as far as college basketball.
Well, I guess the other thing is like being a guy who grew up during the 80s and seeing the Patrick Ewing Georgetown teams and the Villanovas and all of that, all the Big East teams, like in a weird way, I was actually sort of fooled. Like of course college football is a gigantic cash making machine, but in a weird way, seeing the 80s Big East and college basketball, like that was big college basketball. You were in the illusion that college basketball made just as much, if not more money. Cause hey, we have less players and we don't have to buy helmets or we just have to buy, some uniforms and some shoes.
That's what's great about that movie. They point that out, and the commentary is very much that football was the demise of the conference. They got really greedy. But there was a lot of credit given that the Big East really they were the first conference to do, television deals.
Sure. And about the ESPN Big Monday and all that.
Yeah. They had three or four television deals going all at once, and their coaches were finally making six figures. And, but it's very similar model to what ESPN was running with. And, if they had gone a different route, not that a conference can have its own television network, but I forget the producer's name, but there was one guy there that was he was the captain of the ship. And because he was there, it was, very professional, and, the games ran almost smoother than ESPN, and no one really did them as good as the Big East. So just to watch the games on a national level.
Dick Gavitt, probably. Dave Gavitt?
anyway. Yeah, that might be it. But
anyway, but it's also one of those things. But then going back to what you said, why did ESPN get to have Big Mondays? It's because in some ways, college basketball wasn't making that much money. They were, and ESPN wasn't ESPN wasn't the ESPN that we know it to be today, but this was one of the building blocks.
Well, because the
Big East basketball and ESPN helped each other build each other up.
Yep, and the league was so, that's the thing, because they get into it. The league was so deep. I mean, you had Chris Mullin at St. John's.
Oh.
And, I mean, just.
You knew all the coaches by name. Raleigh Massimino,
John Thompson.
Carneseca, Boeheim.
Yep.
It really was. And everybody had, it was like, yes, you had. Everyone had a star.
So there were so many good games that allowed ESPN to pick up a couple over here. And then the other thing that they did that was really smart is it wasn't just the big teams. Every team got equal airtime. So then you got a Seton Hall got a shot on a Monday. And, you got to – so that it helped with their recruiting. And so just
– oh, trust me. When I was at Syracuse and we lost to the Phantom Friars of Providence, it was not a good day.
But – leading all this comes to head in that following that was an incredible Dean Smith documentary that I watched. I think it was on Showtime, but just great coach, legendary coach. If you're not familiar, North Carolina, at one point was the all-time wins leader. I think Boeheim passed him, but maybe not now.
But now he's vacated. Right, he had to vacate a whole bunch of
something
wins.
Something like that. But look, North Carolina legend built that whole program up.
Right.
George Karl, North Carolina. Mitch Kupchak, who's now going reportedly back to Charlotte to work with Michael Jordan and build up his franchise.
A lot of Tar Heels working with Tar Heels in North Carolina. Absolutely.
Matt Doherty, failed Tar Heels coach before Roy Williams came back and saved him. But just, obviously Jordan, Vince Carter, all these great players all played under Dean Smith. But he's a Kansas guy. He played at KU. He went to KU. He's from Emporia, Kansas, and Topeka. But what I didn't realize is his father was the high school coach in Emporia, and in fact was the first coach in Kansas to integrate black players into their team. And
oh, that's interesting.
So growing up, Dean Smith was just all around like this real, you know, positive and equal rights, and made a couple,
because he has his social conscience, and what he did as a campus leader is just as important as what he did on the court. Absolutely.
And they come to point out that at some point, North Carolina was a death penalty state, and he on several occasions wrote letters for pardons. A couple of them came true. So he kind of technically actually saved a few people's lives that were on death row. Uh-huh. Took a lot of grief from that, politically, in North Carolina. But just an amazing person. Unfortunately, he passed away, I think, in 2012 or 15. It was recently. And he had dementia or Alzheimer's or failed mental health, unfortunately, towards the end of his life.
All right, don't bring us down. We get it. You know who else died from North Carolina today as we're recording this? Billy Graham. So it's been a bad day for North Carolina.
Sad day for North Carolina. But
10 bells.
What I'm saying is it's an awesome documentary, and that's just a few. I mean, that's just three things that I learned, and I picked up a bunch of other stuff.
Sure, if Liev Schreiber is, there's just like basically two people that should narrate everything: Morgan Freeman and Liev Schreiber.
Look, I didn't know that Mitch Kupchak went to North Carolina, and I had forgotten that George Karl went to North Carolina.
I didn't know about Kupchak. It's the current stories. I was like, oh yeah, he's one of those guys.
Yeah, it was like in the late 60s or something like that. It's like, oh yeah, Jerry West is a coal miner's son from West Virginia. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so we got March Madness coming up, but to get off basketball, to get off Dean Smith, let's switch it up to the Olympics. I've been kind of hooked. I'm kind of pissed. There's way too much figure skating. But the Lindsey Vonn story, captivating. But I've been watching the downhill skiing. I kind of like the stones.
Well, I'm wondering now that her last run,
curling.
She won a bronze medal. But so can we call it Lindsey Vonn's now, or the Vonn's medal? Like, shouldn't I think maybe we can. It should be the Vonn's medal from now on. Medals would be the Vonn's.
As we're recording, she may have just won a gold. She had like a 3/4 of a second lead in the race, whatever she was, which I thought she was done. So I think they may have just thrown her in, like, hey, you want to just do this too? Sure. Why not?
I enjoy the Hungarian woman, as we talked about at halftime, who just gamed the system. She's from Northern California, her grandparents from Hungary. She's taking advantage of she's sort of doing an Eddie the Eagle, but not as lovable.
We call that in the Summer Olympics, that's referred to as the Chris Kamen, the German center.
Right.
You may remember him from his amazing all-star years with the LA Clippers.
But there isn't that a weird, so there's a weird double
bullshit
standard. In other words, but here's what I'm saying is the cross-country skier from Mexico comes in last, and we love him. And of course we Cool Runnings was on again last night, or it's on this afternoon.
Real quick question: was the Jamaican was Jamaican bobsled a thing before Cool Runnings, or did Cool Runnings?
No, that's what started. Cool Runnings is like on a true story.
No kidding. I had
on
no
a true
idea.
Story. Yeah, because one of the people who's not the actors.
We'll say Dougie. We'll say whoever plays Dougie Doug.
I'm just saying, of those guys, one of those four guys in real life is now the head of the Jamaican Bobsled Olympic Committee.
Okay.
One of the more interesting things is that apparently there's a two-woman bobsled team, and one of their coaches resigned or got fired, and one of her beefs was that, like, hey, I rented the sled. Like, I paid for the sled. You guys are going to make me resign or fire me. I'm going to take the sled with me.
So they repoed the sled in Sochi? Or not Sochi, but...
No. Right, in Pyeongchang. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Where they are now. Like,
good,
this,
good
this
for
year,
him. I'd do that shit.
We're saying, like, last week, the woman's, the two-woman bobsled Jamaican team almost didn't have a sled. And then... And in a weird way, some people are trying to portray that the coach who got fired was being petty, but I don't actually think she was. I think she was kind of getting, I think she kind of gotten screwed. Fortunately for the team, Red Stripe Beer, you know, tweeted at them, said, "Hey, you know, put it on our tab. Hey, Jamaica Bobsled Team."
Wow, good for them.
So,
good for them.
You know, but that's one of those weird things where we find it lovable. Like the guy who wore is the guy, the shirtless guy from Tonga, was going to cross country ski too, and we find that lovable. But you know, the Jamaican bobsled, we find that lovable. You know, like, or if this, you know, the first team from Africa that's doing bobsled, we find that lovable. But if it's a, you know, kind of a rich white woman from Northern California who's just sort of gaming the system, not as lovable as Eddie the Eagle from England, because it's also one of those things like you have to like qualify in the top 30 of, but it turns out like only like 24 women often do these events. So she was like, she gamed the system and, you know, basically did this half pipe, you know, but never actually went above the pipe.
Wow. Oh, so I got you. I got you. So you she know? Just kind of skied down. They were like, 17 maybe.
She
didn't technically ever leave the ground.
If you had Irish grandparents, you could have swum for Ireland or, you know, like, wouldn't you want to have to, wouldn't you do the Olympic experience? So I think there's a little bit, I mean, you know, hey, there's a double standard.
Well,
there are many standards for many people.
And one of the American skiers, she was born in Canada. So I don't know, because I was thinking like, well, which team's better? Did she kind of do the same thing? Like, well, do I have a better chance in America or Canada? But, you know, she chose America. I have no idea what that girl's name is, but just know that that's one of the female skiers that you may or may not have watched.
I think one of my favorite stories is there was a radio announcer who basically got fired because he decided to say how attractive he thought the female skier Chloe Kim, who won the gold medal, was. And just a weird, you know, just a weird guy digging his own grave.
Speaking of, I've got this great audio. Look, I'm going to play this. This is the final like 15, 20 seconds of this cross country skiing event. And this announcer just goes nuts.
They're in the second place. They're all completely gassed. They've given it everything on the clavo. Steven Nielsen leading Jesse Diggins into the final turn. Can Diggins answer?
As the roars rattle around the cross-country stadium in Pyeongchang, Sweden, the U.S., and Norway come into the line.
Here comes Diggins!
Diggins making the play around Sweden.
Yes!
Jesse Diggins
yes!
to the line.
Yes!
And it is
yes!
Jesse Diggins delivering a landmark moment that will be etched in U.S. Olympic history. The first ever cross-country gold medal
for the U.S. I mean, that's why the Olympics are great, because if you can make cross-country skiing that exciting, you know, good for you guys. And I've been watching. I don't know what the ratings are, but I know that I've been captivated, and I'm sick of anything that has to do with ice skating. That's another thing.
Well, here's what I'll say is the Olympics are not as interesting when you're not there. I, of course, went to Rio 2016, and it was one of the best weeks of my life. I did not get to go to Korea, so I'm not as excited about it. One of the things that I think is really petty is watching a lot of spoiled Americans complain that America's medal count is low. And, you know, it shouldn't be that high. Norway kicks our ass in, like, biathlon and you know, until recently, cross-country skiing. And, you know, I'm okay anytime, you know, I even enjoy that Russia's not allowed to compete as Russia.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, come on. We know it's Russia. Just, you know, and look, and I love it. Kazakhstan, Liechtenstein, Latvia, all got medals. All have, you know, it's like Liechtenstein has like 800,000 people in it or something,
right.
You know. But yeah, it's, but that's what I wanted. What's that like? Like just being, like you'll never in your life again be in one location where there are 100 different languages being spoken. Like what's
well,
that?
Well, it is. I mean, any when you go, it's like there's just a sense. Like, trust me, guys. You know, like when you look to travel across the world, one of the things they're like, hey, don't dress as an American. You know, you don't want to be obvious. Like, you know, some people put like Canadian, you know, patches on their backpack,
yeah.
And like, you know, and they're like, you know, hey, don't dress like this or don't dress obviously like an American. But so I, you know, when I went to Brazil in Rio, it's like, I, you know, my first day. Like, I'm wearing all black and whatever. Meanwhile, you know, I'm with like Leslie Jones and her stylist, right. Brian, and they're, and you realize like there's five guys from the Netherlands that literally are wearing that Netherland orange. Like they're wearing suits, fully tailored suits that are Netherland orange. And you just see guys in like Union Jack blazers. And so there's this amazing, and you do realize it's like, you're not just at, it's like, you know, I got to see Michael Phelps. So you're at like the top, you know, it's the top swimmers of the world and the top cyclists of the world. It is the top athletes in every discipline. So you're saying, you know, downhill and figure skating and hockey. I mean, now there's still a point where in some ways, like, you know, some people say like, you know, shouldn't we sort of have like in the Summer Olympics, we should have sort of a country versus country tug of war, which I think would be a fun one. And I think in some ways, like, you know, shouldn't there be like a snowball fight? Like, shouldn't we just have an Olympic snowball fight? Just everybody gets the...
Let's introduce it into the X Games first, see where it goes. But I like it.
Right.
That could have some legs.
Well, and then, you know, that is one of the things about America has jacked up its Winter Olympic medal count over the past several years because of... you know, because it's sort of the we've created the X Games and then we imported them into the Olympics. I also got to, you know, one of the things that was one of my Olympic highlights was actually meeting Shaun White, getting to hang out with him a little bit, a couple times with him and his lovely manager, and him talking about that he was thinking about going to the Winter Games, and, you know, he's going to do it one more time, and then he's even going to talk. I think he's going to try and actually, he's probably going to try and do whatever skateboard stuff they have in Tokyo in 2020, you know.
Because he was snowboarding and then got into skateboarding, right? That was the transition.
I don't know. You know, I don't know exactly.
I think
how
that's
that
what it was. I mean, he was obviously good at both, but he's one of the rare athletes. I mean, could you imagine just every 2 years? You're constantly qualifying for the Olympics if you're doing summer and winter.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if LA 2028? I mean, I guess I can look forward to that in 10 years.
Well, you shouldn't look for, by the way, everyone get out of the city. when the Olympics come, it's a little crazy. I mean, I know I've heard stories from the 1984 Olympics here that they would shut down. You'd have half days of work. There were certain times that they would, you know, shut down half days, things like that, stagger work schedules. I mean, I know in, for example, in Rio, they had, not a carpool lane, but an Olympic lane. They had, you know, the far left lane had a green line, a stripe on it. And it was like, you had to have like Olympic tickets, but you could get it. Like, so there's going to be all kinds of, there's going to be all kinds of traffic problems. You think there are traffic problems in LA now? Just wait 10 years till the Olympics come.
And then in another 10 years, it's going to be another 500,000 people living.
Absolutely. So, unless there's an earthquake, everybody. And gosh. I never say that word when I'm in L.A., so trust me.
It's crazy. I mean, just Hollywood, just in that, you know, when I lived over off Orange by the In-N-Out, I lived there for a while, like that whole intersection on La Brea and Fountain is just.
Sure.
I'm like, how do you just tear down grocery stores and then put in 400 apartments? It's like, oh, okay.
Oh, that's true. A Carl's Jr. also be like one Carl's Jr. with a parking lot became basically four stories of condos or apartments, and there's stores and businesses on the first floor. So, you know, there are certain shortcuts for people who know West Hollywood because there's no there's no highways through the middle of the town. There's no fast way. It's Sunset. It's Santa Monica. But even those shortcuts like Fountain or Willoughby suddenly get just jammed up because now you're talking, instead of having these classic, you know, a lot of LA guys, they're not high rises. It's, you know, West Hollywood is a lot of like two story apartment buildings, you know, and a lot of those are like around a pool, like almost like an old style motel kind of thing. And now they go with these bigger things and you're talking about thousands, tens of thousands of more people are just going to, you know,
just pop up, so, and then who knows what the ticket prices will be in 2028. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. It seemed like the Winter Olympics might be better. Just.
Well, I think the Winter Olympics in LA would be fantastic.
Oh yeah, Big Bear it up, man.
Big Bear.
Go to Squaw Valley, have a shuttle up there. Have Elon Musk. Do you see Elon Musk? He's got this proposed 29 minutes from New York to London, and like 23 minutes from LA to Toronto, where he just blasts you up into space and then you just land in the city.
No.
It comes, yeah, and you just come straight back down in the rocket. So you pretty much just go straight up into outer space, and then for about five minutes.
It's one of those, like, it's actually like we go up into space, the Earth turns, and we come down.
Yep, exactly. It's like you're just taking batting practice from city to city. You just catch and pop flies, you know.
It's like, I haven't seen it, but you know, I know I'll love it.
So that's how I plan on traveling to LA for the Olympics in 2028.
Of course, with Elon Musk, you know, I'd be a little bit worried. I heard, you know, I wasn't sure whether, you know, they recently, you know, he launched his car into space.
I love it, man.
In an ultimate homage to the heavy metal opening title credits and a Don't Panic, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I think he was supposed to go by Mars and then orbit the sun or something. I heard both Mars and the sun, but apparently it missed, I don't know, both things. So now I'm just a little bit worried that it's like, you know, you could go L.A. to Toronto, but you end up in Atlantis. Who knows?
Look, it was the first go around. He wants people on Mars by what, 20, I think 2028 or, you know, it's like 10 years or 12 years. So
we're not gonna be on Mars in 10 years.
Look, I love the guy's ambition, the flamethrowers. I mean, and just the videos alone on Facebook are entertaining in themselves. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of 2028, 10 years from now, the Royals may make it back to the playoffs in that time. I don't know. It's the complete rebuild now that, as we talked about earlier, Hosmer's now in San Diego, Moose is nowhere to be found, and the roster is full of up-and-coming prospects that are not even considered prospects on most people's other teams' lists. But baseball's here. Spring training starts. As mentioned last week, may or may not go to the Dodgers-Royals opening day Saturday in Phoenix. Probably not, but we'll see. But I'm excited about this year. It's just baseball season. Summer's right around the corner. Kudos to your Red Sox finally getting that contract worked out with J.D. Martinez.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
The little guy's name J.D. J.D. Drew, J.D. Martinez. If your name's J.D., come to the Red Sox.
Yeah. If your name's Oil Can or J.D., we'll
be. That is the name. He's going to wear number 28. You know, talking about a lot of D.H. Can also talk that Hanley Ramirez is talking a lot about his pliability. Evidently, he went to the TB12. Hanley Ramirez is now part of the Tom Brady, body system. So he's talking a lot about pliability. So, it'll be very interesting. You know, a lot of people are talking, you know, we got the Judge Stanton behemoths in the New York Yankees.
Over-under, it's like I've heard anywhere from 95 to 105, their combined home runs on the season.
Somehow, Brian Cashman just referred to his Yankees as the little engine that could, which I just think is the most ridiculous thing to say.
Goose Gossage is furious. He's not in Florida right now, shagging fly balls. Right.
I'm on Goose Gossage. I'm always on the Goose's side.
Yeah.
I'm on Goose's and Oil Can side, unless, well, Goose. Oil Can, I think, had some domestic battery issues, too, so we're not on that.
Well,
that
and then with time. Ramirez, he's got a certain at-bats, right? And he hits a bonus this season. So,
there is a vesting option, yeah.
So, of course.
If he gets, like, 420, 422.
He was getting close to popping that belt off like Pablo did the other year. You know, he's like, I gotta start dropping some weight before this belt shoots off to first base.
Yeah.
But
it's very interesting that David Price evidently was a big part of the recruiting process, especially after.
If you were in
Boston last summer, it was a very strange time where Boston sports radio wasn't talking about like where the, you know, how many games the Red Sox were ahead or behind the Yankees. Literally, they spent about a month and a half just busting David Price's balls for yelling at David Eckersley and yelling. It was like David Eckersley. I mean, David Price and the Boston media had an unlove affair basically last.
Because he punked him on a plane. Like he just and what Eckersley said wasn't he all nope. Eckersley said was like some minor league guy just wasn't playing that well, and then all of a sudden this was David Price's like little brother in the clubhouse.
It was like the fifth starter, sure, but it was all. I actually happened to be. I was at Fenway, and they and all of a sudden it was the first night that Eckersley was up in one of the booths. I mean, up in one of the boxes, and they put him on camera, and it was the first time Eck had been publicly seen at Fenway since the whole incident. And let me tell you, everything about that is A, the fan reaction, B, his location, and the fact that, you know, the Red Sox put him on, you know, camera and then put him on the big board. Everything said that basically the Red Sox organization and the fan base is kind of more on Eckersley's side than we were on David Price. And David Price
basically David Price shut the fuck up and let Eckersley do his job. Basically we'll send your ass back to Detroit if you don't shut your mouth, David Price. All right.
That's right.
So win some games, you know, Mr. 500. Basically,
you know, one of the greatest things about spring training is somebody once said there are basically like five stories to every. Basically, there are five spring training stories, which is like the wily vet, you know, the vet who's promising he's going to come back, sort of like Hanley Ramirez.
You got the unsigned free agent.
Right?
This year, you got the late to camp guys. That's a new special thing. You've got your unheralded rookie in the Royals case, this Love Lady. They got this Richard Love Lady. Which is like
talking about some ripe for heckling.
No, wait. I'm sorry.
Hold on, I've got it wrong.
Hold on. I'm looking it up right now.
It doesn't matter.
No, it does matter. Holy shit, his name is Richard Love Lady.
Lovely? It's lovely, not love lady.
No. It's love lady.
Love lady? See, now that's killing.
Oh, yes.
That'll be my favorite.
Yes.
That's my favorite lady.
Holy
that's my
shit.
Favorite lady in sports.
If this guy makes the 40-man roster, I'm going to have this dude's jersey April 2nd if this guy makes
the
40-man.
There you go.
Are you kidding me?
There's the Tim Tebow is going to be on the Mets one day, according to their GM.
Okay, that's so anyway, with love... Sorry, I'm getting all worked up. With Love Lady.
You're getting very Love Lady, you know?
He was a 10th round pick out of Kennesaw State 2 years ago in 16. And apparently just has this wicked slider. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's 6 foot, 170-something. Like, you know, not physically intimidating at all. But just been dominating and made it all the way up to AAA this past year. And just... he's on everyone's radar now. Oh no, I'm sorry. He made up to Double A, but he's on everyone's radar now to, you know, possibly make it to the bullpen.
Well, you know, Double A is often where they actually keep the real prospects.
No, absolutely. Triple A is kind of, you got some guys that are out of options that'll bounce around.
Usually
bullpen guys, but yeah, Triple A is where a lot of guys go to end their
careers. And that's where you'll rehab. That's where you're gonna rehab. But it's in some ways, a lot of guys will make a Double A to the show.
Yep, and most people's top prospects are going to be in Double A and High A ball, and not Triple A. but anyway, that's what spring training is all about. You know, you get a Dick Love Lady. You know, to get to.
Well, if you're going to call him Dick Love Lady, now you can't get rid of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that's. No offense to anyone that has a different sexual preference. That'd be awesome if there was a Richard Love dude. I mean that.
Oh well, I'm sure. I'm not. Yeah.
That'd be one hell of a bullpen.
Totally,
Richard Love,
you know,
lady and Richard
whatever,
Love
whatever,
dude.
Whatever, you know. It's.
But anyway, so I'm excited about spring training. There's no hope for the Royals. I've already mapped
There's
out.
There's always hope, and hope springs. That's what spring training in baseball. Remember, Sheez, every baseball team in the major leagues is going to win one third of their game. Every team in baseball is going to lose one third of their game. What is it really about? What you do with that other third. That's what it's about, Sheez.
Yep, and if you lose that other third, then, it makes for a long May, June, July, August, September.
But at least they have the best food in Kauffman. Is it Kauffman Stadium? Remember, guys, get that batting cup, fill of fries,
it's
full
incredible.
Of barbecue. Put your meat. Would you get to choose your meat and this pickles?
Yeah.
Which somehow
do you want
nicely
beef or pork?
Everything.
I gotta take a drink of water. I'm getting thirsty just thinking about it. Oh, it's amazing. I've mapped it out. I went on the Padres. Their opening day is like at 1 o'clock on a Thursday. Opening day this year is, I think it's March 29th. They're doing it at the end of March just so they can have more off days during spaced out throughout the season. But I love going to the Padres day games. I've looked at Anaheim's schedule and the Dodgers, and just going to try to see as many games as I can right out the gate.
And... Well, absolutely. And then, you know, it's like, I'd love to go there. It's always that weird thing like, okay, well, if Hosmer wants to win, why'd he go to the Padres? But, you know, in a weird way, I remember having to eat my words because when Reggie White said God told him to go to the Green Bay Packers, I was like, you're not going to win in the Green Bay Packers. But yet he did. And, you know, Pudge Rodriguez ended up going to, like, the Florida Marlins, and they won that. You know, it's just one of those crazy things.
Yeah, you never know. And they've got a bunch. Padres have what's regarded as a top, I believe, 3 or maybe 5 farm system in baseball. I saw the San Antonio Missions in Midland, and the Missions are the AA team for
– As they should be.
It's Quantrill. Cal Quantrill is a – I think he's their number 3, top 5 prospect for the Padres, starting pitcher. Sure. Probably debut in the bullpen, but just nasty stuff out of Stanford. And then you got Fernando Tatis Jr. coming up at shortstop there. So they've got a bright future. A lot of people, you know, that's a lot of people's opinions in baseball.
And remember, the other great thing about spring training is now it's just somebody just got announced. It's, you know, it's the time for all the 50 game suspensions for all the minor leaguers who get caught doing performance enhancing drugs.
Yep.
And if you're second timers, you get 100. Always nice.
That was the one mark on Raul Mondesi Jr. That dude already served 150 games. So if he gets popped again, now he's looking at a Manny Ramirez 80, you know. And then, or did Manny just get the 50? I don't know.
But it goes to 100. It goes 50, and then it goes 100.
And that's this is why I love. This is why I'm a sportsaholic. It's like, I remember I'm walking into Smart and Final on Pico and Sepulveda, over near Santa Monica. I believe it was 2007. Is when he got suspended, 2008. But
Manny?
Yeah, I get a call on my phone. Hey, you're never going to believe this. Manny Ramirez just got suspended for steroids. What?
No, but what was crazier was that he had not signed. Like, he hadn't signed. It was around this time that year where, you know, spring training had started. He hadn't signed. And so it was like, in the idea that if he was dirty, all he had to do was just hold off signing a little bit more until he was literally clean. So there was this weird thing where it was so weird. Manny being Manny was always this one of the strangest things.
This was 2009, like during the season, because you're thinking he ends up retiring on another steroid thing a couple years later. I think
maybe. No, that wasn't that. It was when he went back to, I mean, he was re-signing with the Dodgers, but he was a free agent, but goes back to
the
Dodgers.
Okay.
Right.
But I mean, either way, he's 36, you know, towards the end of his career.
Hey, you Darvish is a Chicago Cub. We don't know where Jake Arrieta is still yet.
There's a couple names out there. I think this year I'm going to sit down and actually try to map out some guesses. See, put some predictions out there, and I'll actually put them out on the show as well. And just put my neck out there and put the Royals in fourth place in the AL Central, 2 games ahead of the Tigers. how do you think your Red Sox will do, man? I mean, you got to be.
I think we're gonna beat the Yankees. I think we're gonna beat the Yankees.
Hear me out. I mean, before you get into it, because you got it from a big picture. Tampa Bay way down, Baltimore way down, Toronto.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, they're what they were last year, if not a little worse.
Yeah. And then Toronto.
They were in the bottom. So really, you can focus on one enemy. I mean, how do you like your chances?
Well, I'm hoping there's that Judge ends up on that the sophomore slump, aka, you know, people start to have more of a look at him, so they start to figure him out, you know.
Yeah.
Or they start not giving up the long ball. But I think, you know, I'll tell you, man, I think more upsetting than Giancarlo Stanton being a Yankee is Derek Jeter just having a fire sale down in the Marlins. And knowing that he's just, it's one of those things like, you know, like, you know, like, remember Roger Maris came from the Royals. You know what I'm saying? There was a point where sort of Kansas City in the mid 60s they were like a major league farm team for the Yankees.
Well, yeah, and that's just because Arnie Johnson, who owned the Athletics at the time, was what a coincidence. Guess who owned the Yankee Stadium? Arnie fucking Johnson, and owned the parking lot. Arnie Johnson and his company. So
I'm just saying, there's those weird times where somebody is like, right now, I feel like the Miami Marlins or whatever the hell their name are basically just. They're an, you know, even Don Mattingly is their manager.
They've always been a joke. Like when Bill Veeck ran them back in the 50s, like he, like they're always just, I mean.
You're talking about the Athletics and I'm talking about the Marlins.
That's well, no. Well, I'm talking about the Miami Marlins back in the 50s when they were like a.
They're not even a major league team then. That's like talking about like the old San Diego Padres when they're in the Pacific League.
Right.
Exactly.
Like but they, like that team's always been like, they always just did. Just had trouble with the tendons.
But it's a difference when it's a major league team that is basically just is basically a minor league team. And look, you had Jermaine Dye,
yes,
you had Johnny Damon, you had, like there was a point where you had this, you had like four or five all-star.
Dude, Jermaine Dye,
you know,
Johnny Damon, and right. Carlos Beltran for 2 years in the outfield.
And they all went somewhere else.
Jermaine Dye, 2 years later, was the World Series MVP in Chicago. And Johnny Damon obviously had some success in Boston and in New York. But
they both made stops like at the Oakland A's. And it was, I mean, there's a weird part where like, I mean, what, Jermaine Dye broke his own leg during one of the playoffs. I mean,
yeah, fouled
Johnny
a ball
Damon
off his
got a
leg.
Concussion during a playoff series. It's like, it's crazy. Some of the stuff that happens, you know, and that's one of the things. And that's why they play the game, as they say in sports. Because you never know when a Kevin Brown's going to punch his hand and break his hand. You never know when a Roger Clemens going to throw a bat at Mike Piazza. You never know what crazy stuff's going to happen.
Well, hear me out here. I think you guys will win the division. Barely, maybe a half game, maybe a game and a half.
You know,
but listen,
by a game.
Here's just five words all right here. Sale, Price, Porcello, Pomerantz, and Kimbrel. And that's it. That's why you guys will win the AL East this year by either.
Hopefully it will be about pitching. But by the way, I wouldn't mind adding Jake Arrieta to that. I'm not the guy. You know?
Well, and then you got, you know, I mean, not that Steven Wright's sure. Amazing, but he's a nice little like, oh, okay, yeah, let's mix it up a little bit. We'll put limit.
You never know what you're going to. It's a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
But you've got nothing out of David Price. You know, and so if he brings anything to the table, like that's just an added addition. Porcello.
But I'll tell you this. They can't take the 2013 World Series championship away. We won't vacate that like Louisville. Let me tell you that.
No, I mean, because you guys vacated in 12 due to the chicken and beer, right? Was that in 12?
Chicken and wine, yeah, chicken and wine, chicken and beer.
Yeah, that caused you to vacate the 2012.
We're very interested. You know, it's like, it's also, look, Boston is a very tough baseball town. There's a lot of reporters. There are just certain franchises that it is really tough to be in certain franchises. There's a reason Vladimir Guerrero is gonna go into the Hall of Fame this year as an Angel. It's because he was never gonna make
bullshit.
Yeah, he should go
bullshit.
In as an Expo.
Bullshit.
He absolutely should go in as an Expo.
Oh, excuse me, let me get some water.
But it's I'm just saying that Vlad Guerrero, one of my all time favorite players, but he wasn't really, you know, he wasn't made for a major market.
Yeah,
you know, and there are some players that you can see, like Gary Sheffield. That guy was
Tony Gwynn
for the New York Yankee media pressure.
You got some guys that can carry franchises, and Hosmer kind of did that, you know, in Kansas City, but not with his like he. I mean, he's kind of a weak example.
I'm just saying you guys don't have those sort of like, you know, there are certain writers that go out to really make hay, and they can really make it. It's like what I'm talking about is like that David Price Eckersley thing.
Okay,
that becomes a huge story in Boston. Whereas, you know, if we're in Seattle, if we're in Arizona, does that become in Kansas City? Is that a big thing in Miami? Do we really care? It's just not that it's an all consuming, you know, it's like, you know, as a sportsaholic, I would sit there. You read every columnist from the Boston Globe. You read every columnist from the Boston Herald. You're trying to glean every little fact. about your team. You're reading. It's like, I would know who's on my 40-man roster. I remember when David Eckstein, I was like, when we waived David Eckstein, I was like, oh, that's trouble. And, of course, he ended up over at the Angels. One of, you know, it's like you really know your team. You go deep into it.
Yeah.
And
look, I'm going to suggest a podcast reel here. It's called On Baseball Writing by Jay Jaffe, J-A-F-F-E. But that's great. If you're interested in sports writing or sports broadcasting, he has on a bunch of great writers all the time. It's a really good podcast to listen to. Anyway, sidebar. Sorry about that.
No, man. Hey, look, I watch Around the Horn and PTI every day just to, you know, catch an idea of what's the buzz. What are we talking about? You know, who's what? And you want to see what everybody's, you know, what little angles are.
See, I have intentionally not read any of the Hosmer stuff. Actually, that's not true, actually. I did read briefly Rambling Moron, the fake Ned, Chris Kamler, the author that wrote from the Silence of Sirius, the season of Sung Woo. We've had him on the show a bunch of times, probably have him on here pretty soon again, talk Royals. But God, what was I going to say? Oh, so the Hosmer stuff. Yeah, that's right. Sorry, I got sidetracked. But I've been inspired to start writing. I want to put my shit down on words. And I've written some stuff previously years ago about Kansas basketball. But just something about this Hosmer trade just kind of resonated in my mind. I'm like, there's a lot of stuff I think I could put down.
I'll say this. You're talking about you were saying about making predictions for the baseball season.
Right.
Here's my final four prediction.
Okay.
Kansas Jayhawks. It's the Jayhawks year. I'm pretty sure.
No, dude, I think I agree with you. And this isn't just because I pick KU every year, because I had a weird deja vu moment in 2003. This is how long, pardon the interruption, has been on. 2003. I'm watching about a month before the NCAA tournament, and they have Jim Boeheim on. Jim,
they did.
You've never won a championship. You've been to the tournament 12 times. You know.
Yep.
I
remember this interview.
Do you like your chances? You know. Well, we've got this young kid, know, Carmelo, obviously very talented. Probably
Jerry McNamara, sure.
You know, Hakeem Warrick. We got him. You know,
the blocker, sure.
Blocked Lee's shot there in the championship game. But so just today, I turn on PTI and yesterday up pops Bill Self. And
Exactly. That's why, in some ways, that's why I'm thinking it.
It was the same interview, man. I saw this interview 15 years ago with Jim Boeheim.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It was also that they were good early. They struggled in the middle. They put it all together. They just beat that Oklahoma Trae Young team by 30 or something ridiculous.
Well, one, Oklahoma's been struggling. Two, Texas Tech lost tonight to Oklahoma State. So now KU looks like they're going to not comfortably, they still have to win, but get that 14th straight championship. But they're playing like a team. They got this freshman now who just became eligible. He played his last high school game in December. I think it's like DeSouza, I think his last name is. But
You guys are picking up guys. You played really?
Yeah.
You just got a high school kid
in
December?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, he played at the IMG Academy or, you know, whatever. However they do it, you know.
I understand.
That's why there's FBI getting involved these days. But
oh, yeah, the FBI. That's what I'm talking about. There's going to be lots of vacated, you know. And I'm telling you, lots of people try to come after my Patriots and put asterisks on things. It's coming, man. There's going to be a lot more lawsuits. There's going to be a lot more lawsuits about things and violations. Yeah, it's going to get trouble, man.
Yeah, everyone's getting fired in the next 3 years. Watch. Everybody. Everybody's getting fired and replaced by millennials at your job. It's just going to happen. Sorry.
That's true.
Something you did offended somebody today, and they're coming for you. So you better watch it. But no, so KU wins. I think we'll try to get Micah from Iration on to talk KU hoops. He's again, shout out Micah, if you're listening, thanks again. The One Love Reggae Festival in Long Beach a couple weeks ago, they killed it, destroyed it. One of the best shows I've seen in fucking very long time. So thanks again from that, but hopefully KU gets it done. Micah, I'd love to get you another KU you know, something better than a Sweet 16 shirt, something
and
like
hopefully
that.
Not to be vacated by the FBI. Well,
not going to happen. Not
with like a non-vacated championship.
KU doesn't need, our boosters are just, they're just country club, just, you know, they know how to play by the rules.
You can say that all you want, but until you find out about sex parties, you never know. You just never know.
Yeah, that's true. You guess you do never know.
You're trying to tell me on the one point, you just, you know, you got this high school kid that in December was in high school, and all right, who knows what happened? And come on, man.
Hey, he got cleared. The NCAA said
he's cleared for now, but that, you know, it's like, hey. And by the way, just so you know, apparently Kevin Ware broke his leg horribly for nothing now. And
oh,
it's not like Kevin
God.
Ware's
Why'd you bring
leg
that up
vacated.
Again? That was, oh, that was just, that, that, I mean, that was
ugly.
That was like Napoleon the Callum ugly, you know, brutal. Well, I think that my list is complete. I mean, everything
we've talked about it. We've solved everything.
I think so. I mean, and we only mentioned the Patriots now twice in the whole episode, so that's not bad either.
Yeah.
No, I guess maybe three
times.
You know,
times. We're just going to try to come back next year, see how we can do.
Anything you want to say here before we get out of here, before I do the last plugs?
Nope, I have no plugs.
Okay, then I'll start with that. Thanks, guys, new listeners, at Big Threes with three G's and at Well It's G. New listeners to the show, thanks for jumping on board here, guys. Again, if you're in Southern California, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop at Eat a Burrito, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, and just amazing food, incredible hospitality, and great location. You really can't beat that. And again, in excuse me, when you need shirts, if you need shirts, UnionPressKC.com. UnionPressKC.com. They can design them for you. They're quick. They're affordable. They're fast, all that good stuff. So check that out. And then
Union Press KC, use them.
Stand up wise, before we hit the horn here, tonight, if you're listening by chance, Gilroy, California, in Northern California, just south of San Jose, at the District Theater. Show starts at 8 o'clock. Great lineup. There's more information on that at johnjonishere.com. And also, Midwest people, right now in May, probably going to add some more dates, but right now, Thursday, May 10th. At the Mod Gallery in Kansas City. That's 8 o'clock. And then May 11th and 12th, that's going to be at the Blue Room in beautiful Springfield, Missouri, right in the heart of the Ozarks. So come on down, have a laugh or two or three, follow those up with some beers, and have a good time. And I think that will be it. I think that's it.
Hey, everybody, that's John Cheeser. I'm Eric Reno. This is a train whistle. Stay upset.